Is going to preach. I'm just going to pray, Lord. We just pray that you open our ears and open our hearts to what Tony is preaching to us today. In Jesus' name, amen.
Greetings from the three churches in Debenham, and it's nice to be back again. I haven't got a lot to say myself about shame, blame, and guilt. So I plan to make it somewhat interactive, if that works, to ask you for your own ideas and stories, and to offer you some resources should you wish to look into the subject further. So details will be on the slides, which will be available on the church's website in a few days, normally. Let's look at these Bible passages. That's it. Right, that's page number 1073 in your church Bibles. A fairly well-known passage, but apparently not in the earliest and most reliable Greek manuscripts. Does that matter? Did John later decide to add it? Or it might have been added after he died, so there's a bit of mystery there. However, it certainly sounds like Jesus to me, and it makes a jolly good story, so let's use it anyway. Jesus and the woman who was not stoned. She was guilty, she was shamed, but the expected sentence was not carried out. And where was the blame? Besides adultery featuring in the Old Testament as one of the Ten Commandments, that is, don't do it, it was given the death sentence in Leviticus 20, verse 11. If a man commits adultery with another man's wife, with the wife of his neighbour, both the adulterer and the adulteress are to be put to death. The prophet Ezekiel used it as a metaphor for idolatry by Jerusalem, meaning the southern tribe of Judah. Jesus, in his Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, widened the meaning to include looking at a woman lustfully, unusually focusing on the man and not the woman. It was normally the woman who got the blame, as in this story. So Jesus acknowledged that she was guilty, and the sentence was correct, according to the Old Testament law, but he did not appear to judge her, or indeed blame her, and she walked free, no doubt severely chastened. Was she a prostitute, I wonder? How else would the Pharisees and the scribes have found her in flagrante? And if she was a prostitute, why was she guilty and not the man? There are echoes of our own legal history here. Prostitutes and brothels are caught, but the men have escaped conviction. But that's beginning to change. And what about us? Maybe not adultery, but we've all sinned and we have no right to escape God's conviction. Yet we also walk away, guilty but not condemned. The sentence we were expecting has not been enacted, and we're saved, set free. Go and sin no more is a message to us too. We may be justified before God, that is, declared righteous, our sins washed away, as in the first song we sang. But we are not morally virtuous. We are free to start again and begin the process of sanctification, becoming better people, living in the Spirit. Moving on to the next passage. After Jesus' resurrection, there's a lakeside barbecue, and Jesus has a one-to-one with Peter, who has disowned Jesus three times. Peter is guilty. He's feeling ashamed of himself, no doubt. But will Jesus disown him? No, Jesus doesn't judge him. He doesn't blame or shame Peter. He forgives Peter and gives him a job to do. Similarly, Zacchaeus, the tax collector, is not judged by Jesus, nor apparently his disciple Matthew, another tax collector. Think of them like bankers, or if you're a banker, think of them like fraudsters. Who does Jesus judge? Only the Pharisees and Sadducees and the temple hierarchy, I think. And even then, not personally. Now let's talk about shame. Have you ever been ashamed of what you've done? Or has anyone brought shame upon your family or community? In the Bible, shame is primarily an Old Testament thing. Beggars and lepers experienced it, childless women and poor widows, the disabled and mentally ill. Also, though, if visitors came, and the obligation of hospitality could result in shame if there's no food left. So, examples of shame in the Old Testament, can you think of any? Yeah, Bathsheba. David was shamed by Nathan, the prophet later. Well, let's move on. One of the best speakers and writers on shame is the American Brené Brown. He's an expert on courage, vulnerability, shame, empathy, and leadership. And there are a couple of TED Talks you can look at, and some podcasts on Spotify, some talks on YouTube. She doesn't write from a specifically Christian viewpoint, although she is a Christian, apparently, but what she writes is certainly compatible with Christian thinking and practice. And there are 8 books here, all available free, absolutely free, if you've got a library card, which is also free. This is a plug for my wife who's working in the library today. Here's 4 of them. A little quote from Daring Greatly. Shame. We all have it. Shame is universal and one of the most primitive human emotions that we can experience. The only people who don't experience shame lack the capacity for empathy and human connection. Here's your choice. Fess up to experiencing shame or admit that you're a sociopath. We're all afraid to talk about shame. And the less we talk about shame, the more control it has over our lives. Rising Strong. Page 195. This is about composting failure, she calls it. How to deal with shame. Talk to ourselves in the same way we talk to someone we love. Yes, you made a mistake. You're human. You don't have to do it like anyone else does. Fixing it and making amends will help. Self-loathing will not. And secondly, reach out to someone we trust, a person who has earned the right to hear our story and who has the capacity to respond with empathy. Now, just a couple of quotes. Did Jesus ever feel shame? What do you think? No, I don't think he did. He will not be ashamed of us even when we let him down or screw things up. But have we any stories of shame ourselves? You know, can we do a microphone thingy?
Hi there, very good morning. Do you think God's in control of everything that's going on and leading us to good things, to better things, to goodness that's here? So I had to come home. Oh, sorry.
It's okay, Bernard. This is the place where you can
wake up. Can you make so the camera can see?
I had to come home 45 years ago and acknowledge to my wife that we'd thrown away our house and we were penniless and I hadn't got any work. Sort of, you know. And how has it affected me? Really? Okay. It feels like a whole lifetime. Children were just young teenagers at that time, and one of the things that God did through that is actually bring reality to our lives. That's here, and our teenagers have grown up more aware of life and relationship and responsibility and care. They haven't blamed me, but I find it very difficult not to blame myself, you know, because I just had my eyes closed at that time, and I think I must have just not understood the risks that were going on. But God picked us up, and like I've done 5 different jobs since then. You know, I've learned lots of other new skills. I've built lots of new relationships. You know, so that's what God's into, isn't he? He's giving us growth. He's giving us opportunity, and he's giving us closeness back to him as well. That's there. So look forward to it. It's exciting.
Yeah, I'd like to say something. You might find this a bit hard to believe, but many, many years ago when I was working in Jeffrey's shop, God, that's maybe 40 years ago now. Jeffrey was my boss in Amadeus House, where I worked. It was halfway up 4th Street. It was a musical instrument shop. He was the world's leading expert on clarinet. Anyway, I'm sitting at my desk, and I think I was feeling particularly depressed. And for some reason or another, I actually found myself at the back of the crowd where Jesus was talking. And according to Pecky, John Peck, not only had this woman committed sin, but apparently, according to Jewish law, they'd all committed sin by witnessing it. I was at the back there, and I looked at their faces, and he completely confounded them. And the looks on their faces were something else. And I started to laugh. And for the next 20 minutes, I roared with laughter and with tears streaming down my face, because it was funny. He actually confounded them with their own words. And I found this amusing. And it was a wonderful experience, because the love is all about laughter and joy and happiness. So I understand it's a bit crazy, but I think I actually witnessed it. So I thought I'd just throw that in, because it reminded me, I'd actually forgotten that experience, and when you started talking about it, it reminded me of it all. That's all I wanted to say.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Penny?
This is just a short story of being shamed at school, and we all had a hamster in a cage in our classroom. Well, not each, but one to share. And fed it with some food, and it had a red, sort of bright red piece of food in there. And somebody said, "Oh, she's fed the hamster with crayon." And I was made to stand up in front of the class, and I was shamed. But in actual fact, it was a piece of fruit or something that had gone bright red. But I went bright red because it wasn't crayon. It was a piece of hamster food. But I was just remember feeling really, really embarrassed.
Yeah, school can be a cruel place. Was there somebody else? Andrew, how's it?
All right, I'll rattle through this quickly. Right. When I was a little girl, I took my brother's little radio to school without telling him, to show off to my friends. I put it in my desk, I forgot to take it home. Yeah. And Brother Peter said, "Has anybody seen my radio?" No. I lived days of misery and shame, knowing, and I thought, how am I going to get out of this? But I think my sister Margaret, in the end, spilt the beans to Mum and Dad, because I did share with Margaret. And my dear mum sat me down and said, "Did you take Peter's radio to school?" "Yes, Mummy." But love and forgiveness, and that's what God is, and that was shown through my dear mum. And all was fine and dandy, but the shame I felt for days, and telling lies, no good, is it?
Thank you for
it. he was known as Brud the Prowler, because what he shouldn't be doing. Brud the Prowler.
Oh, I see that. Andrew, better make this the last one.
Just going to say, a little Tuesday group that Joe and I attend, one thing we did one evening is we all went through, had to volunteer our own embarrassing moments. And actually embarrassment is really very, very closely connected with shame. And it's not necessarily to do with guilt. And shame can be not necessarily to do with guilt. The little saying I've had given to me is that guilt is about what you've done. Shame is about being ashamed of who you are. And embarrassing. And it was a really good exercise. It was a really liberating exercise just to be able to go through each. We all had embarrassing moments. Everyone, I would imagine everyone's had embarrassing moments. And that is, I mean, obviously you can make light of it, but is a connection through to the shame thing. If we're embarrassed, there's a kind of shame thing. So to be able to share that, even if it was kind of the lighter things, can be a route through to the deeper things. But if you start off on the lighter things, which are connection through to shame, and you can share that, then maybe that opens you up to be able to talk about the things that really hurt. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good point, Andrew. Shame is about...
I know you've finished, but just shame's not always founded and it's not always true, because as a child I remember shame when I was being bullied and being called names, and I was really young, I was about 5 years old, and I still remember that feeling that the bullies, what they were saying about me was true, and it felt shameful. So I just wanted to say that shame is not, it's not always true, it's not always founded, and that we're forgiven anyway, but you know, sometimes it's a lie.
Yeah, absolutely. It's about what you are, or what people say you are, even if it's not true. Let's move on to blame. Now, this can be blaming yourself or blaming others, or other people blaming you, indeed. Social media thrives on that latter sort of blaming others. It's the immigrants, or the Muslims, or the political party you don't support, or the vaccines, or the deep state, or 5G mobile masts, or whatever. Blaming yourself is a trickier problem. You may or may not be to blame for something bad that's happened to you or to others, but a key factor in dealing with blame, particularly when you're not to blame, is forgiveness, including forgiving yourself. And here I want to advertise some programmes from the BBC in a series called Forgiveness, Stories from the Front Line. And it's available on BBC Sounds. And the presenter, Marina Cantacuzino, is a journalist who became interested in forgiveness at the time of the Iraq War. She wrote books and founded a charity called the Forgiveness Project. Now, a common theme running through these stories is that forgiveness is difficult, messy, and complex, but it brings with it the power to transform lives. She believes that self-forgiveness can be the hardest sort. I'll read out some summaries of some of the stories. There was Liz Cashin. Her years growing up were utterly spoiled by an accident in which she killed a school friend when she was 13. She was in a sports event and throwing a javelin, and unfortunately the other pupil was in the wrong place and was killed. Believing herself to be to blame for her death, Liz's life became one of self-destruction until events allowed her to forgive herself and achieve happiness in her middle age. And that was largely because the mother of their killed child forgave her and accepted her. Next, a Romanian lorry driver caused death by dangerous driving on his phone, I think, and was imprisoned for 8 years. Among the victims were Marie Johnson's mother and stepfather. Can Marie find a way to ease her pain and forgive the driver? By deciding to meet him in prison through a process of restorative justice, she has a chance to try. next when Matthew Shirker was a teenager in Brooklyn, New York. He came out as gay to his father, who put Matthew through conversion therapy. Now, you may have heard of conversion therapy done by Christians, sadly, to try and to change his sexuality. 5 years of misery took Matthew to the edge of suicide. He had to cut his mother and sisters from his life, sleep with women with the aid of Viagra, and to hide his true identity. He eventually escaped the therapy, but could he find a way back to his father through forgiveness? Well, you'll have to listen to the story to find out. Lastly, Ivan Humble from East Anglia, I believe from Ipswich, was a former organiser for the English Defence League. Now, you may have heard of them. That was a far-right organisation founded by Stephen Yaxley Lennon, better known as Tommy Robinson. Ivan is now working to prevent radicalisation. He wrestles with forgiving himself. Quote, I hated Muslims. I thought they were all terrorists. I now know that hate is just a fear of the unknown. And he's now friends with many Muslims, including Manwar Ali, a former jihadist from Ipswich who supported Ivan when his father died. We hear from both men about their friendship and how they're making amends for the past. And there are many more stories available there. Personally, apart from blaming my wife for things she hasn't done, and usually my fault, and occasionally vice versa, I don't have much experience of blame myself. And I wonder if you have any stories. Well, we've heard a bit about embarrassing things, but have you been blamed for something you didn't do?
Hello. I'll get the ball rolling with something very light and what might appear trivial. And actually this morning we were in all sorts of panic trying to get here as usual. And the car keys had vanished. Now, there are a number of choices you can make when you're surrounded by a family panicking as we're leaving for a car and the car keys have vanished. First of all, you look at all the people who could have been driving the vehicle. So that knocked Ariana out of the equation. The next person to blame would be the last person who drove the car. And of course, Muggins here was the last person who drove the car. And being defensive by nature, I would have obviously looked for every reason not to blame myself. But on this miraculous occasion, I did lay all the blame firmly on my own shoulders. And within 30 to 40 seconds, the car keys were retrieved from my trouser pocket under the bed. And off we went. So the story does actually end there. I'm not taking credit for taking the blame, but there's no doubt about it that if you do take responsibility for things, it does make life easier after the initial shock. It's better to have an initial shock and get it dealt with than to hang around and be in denial for a long time and watch the whole situation deteriorate. Mm. That's today's.
Thanks. Anybody else? Yes?
I'd like to relate this. When my son was, Simon, was at the junior school in Framlingham, at that time he was very keen on making sort of Stone Age weapons, and he was always making bows and arrows and all sorts of things. Anyway, he made quite a fearsome axe with a flint head, and he took this axe to school. Well, it wasn't long before the older boys were swinging it around all over the place, and of course it was quickly confiscated. Well, afterwards, the teacher, when the lessons resumed, the teacher said, "Who brought this to school?" And my son put his hand up and he said, "Please, miss, it wasn't me."
Chris, behind you.
I don't know if any of you have ever done this before. When you've been working somewhere, someone leaves the company for whatever reason, we always find it very easy to blame them for something that's happened.
Thanks. You better move on. So I want to talk about guilt. Now, guilt is closely associated with shame, but is unfashionable today. We have a no-fault divorce, no-fault car accidents, no-fault evictions, hopefully to be removed soon. In this section, I want to focus on a book that Sue and I have been reading for our Bible book club in Grunsborough. And it's certainly the hardest book we've ever had to read for the group. Now, John Piper is an American evangelical Christian. He's a Reformed Baptist theologian and retired pastor. And in 2007, he wrote a book criticizing the so-called new perspective on Paul, and in particular, Tom Wright, then Bishop of Durham. And the book was called The Future of Justification, a Response to Tom Wright. 2 years later, Tom Wright responded with his own book, and this is it. Very difficult to summarise, but I'll bring out a couple of points. I'm sure John Piper is a lovely chap, but Tom Wright's argument with Piper's old perspective on Paul centres on the idea of Piper that God had plan A, which was the promise to Abraham, the Jews and the Jewish law. And then when that didn't work, he sent his son Jesus as plan B. No, Tom Wright says. God had one single plan through Israel for the whole world, including Abraham, the Jews and the law and the Messiah, who by his faithfulness achieves the apparently impossible, namely salvation for the Jews and for us Gentiles. We are adopted as members of God's people. Another strand is about righteousness. Piper and others say that God imputes his righteousness to us, or somehow it gets rubbed off on us, so we become righteous too. Indeed, I've heard that said in two talks here recently in Bremen. We get Jesus' righteousness, for instance. No, Tom Wright says. Paul is writing about God's righteousness and his covenant faithfulness, sticking to his own plan. There never was a plan B. God has declared us righteous through our faith or belief in Jesus and his saving grace. It's a status, not a quality that we somehow inherit or acquire through our own actions. Imagine you're in a law court and hauled up for doing something wrong, like poisoning your neighbour's cat because it kept eating the expensive koi carp in your fish pond. You know you're guilty. The judge knows you're guilty. The whole court knows you're guilty. You admit it. Yet the judge declares, not guilty. Is he off his rocker? No, because God, who is the judge in this case, is a God of love. And because of Jesus' atoning sacrifice on the cross, we escape the sentence we deserve. So, not guilty, says the judge, and we better believe it. We get righteousness from God, not God's own righteousness. Well, that may seem a rather subtle point, but apparently it's very important. Well, Tom Wright says so anyway. Of course, there's a lot more in the book. For instance, when Paul quotes a verse, it isn't just a verse. Same with Jesus. It's a whole, referring to the whole chapter in a book, or a book, just as if I say to you, to be or not to be. You immediately think of Shakespeare's Hamlet and possibly know the rest of the speech and its context. And those chapters about the Jews in Paul's letter to the Romans are not an irrelevancy to us Gentiles, something we can gloss over. They are fundamental to Paul's argument. But anyway, I've said enough about that book. If you want a challenge, read that book. So, summarise, God has declared us not guilty. We can suffer from false guilt, such as when we believe we haven't done enough for someone, and we ought to have done more. Or like the girl who threw the javelin, we can blame ourselves when it wasn't our fault. And we need to learn to forgive ourselves and be forgiven. Or we can actually be guilty and may need to seek forgiveness from other people. But as far as God is concerned, he says, I don't condemn you, go and sin no more. Do you have any stories about feeling guilty? And after now, so I better move on, really. Mothers feel guilty most of the time, yeah. Yes, indeed. Well, we are forgiven people. We are fully accepted and approved and beloved by God. Now, in the words of George Herbert's poem, which we will see, the technology is still working presently. Yes, yes, this song we're going to listen to from Sir Roger Jones' arrangement of the King of Love, King of Glory, King of Peace, I Will Love You. It's a poem by George Herbert, and you know the tune, but this is a rather more interesting tune. So it's one to listen to, really, but it will feature in the concert I'm involved in, the Christmas Tree Festival concert, next Saturday, 7:30. Very welcome to come. I'm in the Combined Churches Choir. I'm not in the Jubilee Ladies Choir. Stowmarket, yes, the parish church in Stowmarket. Incidentally, another plug, I'm also in the choir which will do an interesting Advent performance at Bury St Edmunds in St Mary's Church, Great St Mary's. Sharers in the Promise with Cantus Firmus Choir, primary school doing drama, I think, and I guess Michael will be in the orchestra as well, no doubt. Yeah. Yeah. Right. So. Oh, okay, right. But in the words of George Herbert's poem, though my sins against me cried, thou didst clear me, and alone when they replied, thou didst tear me. Thank you.